Good morning, friends. My name is Bertie, and I'm an alcoholic. I would first like to thank GSO, people who have organized this wonderful convention. This is my second international convention, and let's give them a big hand, and you, who have made it here. And Terry, thank you very much for taking this meeting. Okay, now I will give my AAID. My sobriety date is May 1st, 2006. My home group, which happens to be the best home group in the world, is Road to Sobriety, Dubai. And there's one thing more I want to tell you about, that I am an eye specialist. Now, this doesn't mean to the eyes I'm actually talking about. Normally this, I'm a big eye specialist, you know. Me. And everything has to do with me and I. I grew up in a middle-income family, one sister, younger to me, and when I reflect back, I see myself as a growing up as a very big rebel in school, at home, college, everywhere. And yes, whatever I laid my hands on, I did excel in that. When I started playing a particular game, table tennis, I did excel in that. And when it came to studies, I did there, and I was the first three rankers in my school. And yes, when it came to drugs and alcohol, even then I excelled. So that is where my addiction started. If I get down to doing something, I just see to it that I only do that, and there's nothing else where my mind works on. I will not go much into my drinking days. I am a garden variety alcoholic, and I have had some good days in drinking also, and the last 10 years were very bad. And before that, I think it's important that I need to tell you something about myself, that I'm a dual addict. I was earlier involved in narcotics, and the drug of my choice was heroin. And this was in way back in 1985 that I stopped taking narcotics without any medical help or fellowship. Now, this made me 10 feet tall and 6 feet wide. And this was something which I thought is great. If I could do this, let's now get down to drinking alcohol. Alcohol is something which I can stop anytime. And to top up this confidence, I used to stop drinking as and when my body couldn't accept alcohol. But the confidence I would get is that I stop as and when I want to, which was not the fact. So that's the cunning, baffling part of King Alcohol. When I came into AA, my first meeting was very interesting. I was half drunk, and in my home group, they had 12 steps written over there. I was reading those steps, and I thought, this is pretty simple stuff. It shouldn't take me more than a few days to go through this curriculum. And for me, this is not much. My academic qualifications are pretty good. I'm a master's in economics. So this will not take much time, and I will get through this particular institution soon. Had I known that this is going to be a lifelong place for me to be, I would have walked out the first day. And being a rebel, in my first meeting, although I understood that I'm an alcoholic, but being an eye specialist, I wanted to do it my way. And I tried at various times. I had many slips, and every time I had to come back to AA, and it was after a long while that I realized that this is not an I program, this is a we program. And that is where I would say I took my first step. I am blessed that I have had some wonderful sponsors. My first sponsor is here. He's just given me a hug. And my grand sponsor, who's no more, but he's very instrumental in my sobriety. As I said, I used to slip a lot. Somehow, he had the knack of tracing me, and he would trace me wherever I was, whichever hotel I was. During my last slip, he traced me in one of the hotels, and he positioned one guy over there, just see to it that he doesn't drink, and that guy was there all night, and I was going through with my withdrawals. And the moment that guy left in the morning, I changed my hotel, and I went to a place so that I could drink more. This is how it went on happening. And there was something else about my eye specialist. And after one of the AA meetings, I went to a member's house. Yes, I am a magician also, and somehow I produced a bottle of alcohol in his house. And I told him, come, let's drink, and I'm going to teach you how to drink. Now I know enough about alcoholism because I have attended many meetings. And once I have also found myself drunk in AA convention. There was one very funny part about this fellowship. My first sponsor, he used to tell me that whenever you want to have a drink, give a call to anyone. And this, I couldn't understand this part. I mean, I would wonder, why should I give them a call? Would you get me a drink or what? I would rather call a bootlegger who will get me alcohol. But as we say, newcomer is the most important person in the meeting. If there is any newcomer, I would like to pass this message that once I went for the meeting, I wanted to have a drink. I could not last in a meeting for more than 10 minutes. I came out. I called up my sponsor, who was not in a meeting that particular day. That particular day, we used to do different meetings. And I spoke with him for about 20 minutes. Since then, I have not had a drink. That is when we started working the program. And it wasn't immediately, but as and when after a couple of years, I started working the program. But I had different definitions for some words. I would like to tell you one of them. One of them is honesty. To me, honesty meant whatever money is owed to someone, if I paid that money, that's all honesty. That is what my dictionary told me. And in fact, I have a story over here. Once I went to the doctor, and he told me, how much do you drink? I told him, I take about 8 drinks. He says, cut it to 4. Okay. After a week, went back, same results. Cut it to 2. Okay. And he says, cut it to 1. And I tell him, honestly, I can't do that. He says, what is that? Why? I said, I don't find a glass where I can put one bottle of whiskey in. So to me, this is what honesty meant. Yes, and another thing is gratitude. That is what we are going to be talking about today. And I have a very good definition of gratitude. It is feeling of thankfulness that I have received and I don't have to necessarily pay back to the same person. I never wanted to see the last part of it. So to me, people who helped me get sober, my sponsor, my grand sponsor, mainly to start with. So I thought, I don't have to, and of course I was told God, as and when I started believing, then I said okay. So I was very happy because, you know, I don't have to work with either God or with my sponsor or with my grand sponsor for the sobriety part. So to me it was like, if I have got something, I have to pay back to that same person, and that's about all. Now let's see what AA tells us about gratitude. AA very clearly says gratitude can only go forward. This is what Bill said. And if I have been given this sobriety, I have to pass it on. There are so many other suffering alcoholics. I have to work towards them. And there is another something very good which comes out as a gratitude list, which I was told to make a gratitude list, and I keep working on that. I really sometimes wonder whether gratitude list does any good to me. I will be very honest over here, it doesn't do any good to me. Because to me, gratitude, unless there is some action, it doesn't work for me. So I have to make that list, make another column, what I intend, action I intend taking, and I have to make the third column, that what action have I taken already for what I have received. It could be anything. It could be my sobriety. It could be so many other things. And to me, it is only by service that I can pay back. And service to me doesn't necessarily mean AA. There are so many other places where I can be of service to. One of the prime things is with senior citizens. There are so many senior citizens out there who need nothing from me except if I could spend, let's say, about half an hour with them. And very recently I have been told by a friend of mine that he does the same job with homeless children. And that is also one thing which I could be working on. This is what is there mentioned in, as Bill sees it, page 29. Gratitude should go forward rather than backwards. In other words, if you carry the message to others, you will be making the best possible repayment for the help given to you. And this is how gratitude has been defined by, as I see it, in my program. And it was a journey for me to take to change the old definitions of all the terms which I had. And that wasn't easy. I would like to thank each and every one of you in this room and all the rooms and all over the world. Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me a new way of life. And it is over here that I have changed the definition of so many other terms which... there's one very good one. This is again with my first sponsor. He says, you need to learn how to say sorry. Oh, I said, I'm very good at that. He said, what makes you feel so? I said, once I was drunk, I hit a pole and I said, I'm sorry, sir. So, to me, an apology was just saying sorry. Beyond that, it was nothing. And in fact, I've gone to the extent of getting into an argument and then saying that, okay, fine. I will tell you that I am sorry. Is that okay with you? To me, this is what an apology meant. It is over here that you all taught me what an apology is. And then, yes, I also specialized in, when I was new, even when I was slipping, I specialized in two-stepping. I was very fond of going to a 12-step call with someone or alone or whichever way. And for people who do not know what two-stepping is, I've got a very good definition of it. The trouble with two-stepping is that you usually combine the wrong parts of the first and 12-step. My life is unmanageable and I would like to share it with you. And it gives me a great pleasure today when I go through the steps with my sponsees. And I will be very honest about it. If there are newcomers, again, they say that, oh, this guy is doing so much of work with me, this and that. No, the fact is that I learn a lot when I do the steps with my sponsees. In fact, if I had not been doing the steps with my sponsees, I would not have been where I am today. I get to revise my own fourth and fifth and so many other, rather the whole steps I get to revise when I am working with them. And that is what keeps me going. If the day I stop doing that, to me that is what carrying the message is after I have done my steps. That I have to do the complete 12 steps with my sponsees. And we do not have a very big fellowship in Dubai. In fact, the average size of the meeting I go to is between 7 and 15 people, I would say. And this kind of a meeting, I don't know. Someone asked me, are you nervous? I said, yes, certainly I am, because I haven't attended this big meeting, leave alone speaking in one of them. Two minutes only. Okay. See, now I want to speak more and more. Okay, let me come back and just talk about gratitude. I mean, this is one way which I remind myself rather than just talking about it. I have, with my current sponsor, working on this, and he taught me something very good. He told me that you have to cultivate gratitude. Now, this terminology was again Greek to me. So now I have to get back to him and tell him what all work, these three columns in that list, what I am doing. And I am very, very happy about that. And this is what the big books, again, sorry, it's what, as Bill sees it, says page 37. I try to hold fast to the truth that a full and thankful heart cannot entertain great conceits. When brimming with gratitude, one's heartbeat can surely result in outgoing love, the finest emotion that we can ever know. A thankful heart is free from resentment, self-pity, pride, ego, and we can go on adding to this list. And that is what gets the space for love and humility, and it is humility from where my step one starts. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for giving me a chance to share over here. Wonderful to be here. Thank you.
Our next speaker will be Pat.
Hi, friends. I'm Patty, and I'm an alcoholic, and I'm kind of nervous. I'll get that out of here right away, because this is amazing. I come from a small place in New Brunswick, and we were joking that I think we got the province. The population here today almost filled our province. So we arrived on Thursday night, and we took the MARTA. We took the shuttle to the MARTA, and the MARTA took us down here. And I was joking, because where I live, we don't even have a taxi in that community, and we're about 15 minutes away from a place with a set of stoplights. So anyway, this is a pretty big place, and I'm very grateful to be here. And I'll just say quickly, happy Independence Day for my American friends. Congratulations. In Canada, it was July 1st for us, and we were 148 years old. I'm not sure how old America is, but anyway, thank you. And Dave, our area delegate, and we're from Area 81, and Dave had mentioned to me last fall about could he submit my name, and he said you might get a call, you might not, or an email, or whatever, and I thought, sure, I'll go ahead and put it in. And then the topic that Dave said, you can pick a topic. So the first thing I saw was service. I said, okay, you can put me down for that one. And then when I got the email that I was selected to speak for, if I could speak for this meeting here, it was gratitude, a full and thankful heart. And I thought, oh God, I'd rather talk about me and what I don't have. I don't want to be grateful. I'm not that grateful sometimes, or a lot of time. My sobriety date is actually this time last Saturday. I was at my home group, and my sobriety date is June the 25th, 2007. So I just celebrated 8 years. And so, thank you. I know that some places maybe we go over the top celebrating, we do cakes, and it's a big, kind of a big deal, and we have a lot of fun, and some people don't think it's great, but I think it's good for the new people, because this gratitude and fun and sobriety and all that stuff, when I think about gratitude and stuff like that, and grateful alcoholic, I think of like those you got a duck and a chicken and a seagull and an elephant. And which one of those four things don't belong here? Well, when I think of that, it's like grateful alcoholic doesn't go together. And fun in sobriety, that doesn't work. I couldn't imagine that. And it's proven to me in the short time that I've been around that it is possible. A little bit about my drinking. I grew up on the Miramichi, and I know that we've got some of the Miramichi Mafia here today. So we're all on a bus, by the way. We're 3 days on a bus from New Brunswick to get down here. It was quite a trip. And the fellowship on the bus is wonderful. We get to spend a little time with each other, a lot of time with each other, and it's fun. I didn't participate in as much. I was kind of, to tell you the truth, my mother passed away, and her funeral was about 10 days ago. So I'm kind of inside, not big in, I don't know, just not good in my head right now. But I'm all right, and I'm grateful to be here and celebrate with you people. I grew up on the Miramichi, and I think a lot of us have this thing that our community is the drinking center of the world. And the Miramichi was kind of, that was my claim to fame. We grew up in an area where there was a lot of drinking. I know Cape Breton, they feel that they are. Sometimes Newfoundlanders think that they are. We all have a claim to fame, and that's what I believed ours was. But that's not true. It's just that I grew up in and around alcoholism, and and I was an alcoholic. So I gravitated to those people, to other alcoholics. And so I felt that was quite normal. So I left home at about 17. I moved to Moncton at 18, which is not a real big city, but it was big for me from the Miramichi. And my drinking really took off then. But I didn't consider it a problem. It was just a lot of fun. But I felt that was very normal. Now I can drink as much as I want. There's nobody to tell me what to do. And it got away from me. I was always kind of able to hold it together, keep my life together. I didn't feel it was unmanageable. I could always kept a roof over my head and a car to drive and a little bit of silver in my pocket, and I could manage. I could always manage and keep going. Then as life went on, there was times in my life that I drank more, and there was times that I drank a little bit less. But situationally, when you're working a lot, and I was married and had two stepchildren, so the drinking kind of got reined in at that time. You know, you don't have as much time. And I was younger. As I got older, of course. Anyway, I don't know, quite a few years ago now, my marriage ended, and I felt it was because he drank too much. So we drank a lot together. We had a sailboat, and we had a lot of fun, and it just didn't work out. I don't think alcohol is good for any relationship, and it didn't work out. But I was always quick to blame him, that it was his, that he drank too much. And I was the one that was always doing it, having to do all the work and take care of things. Anyway, when I felt that my life was getting harder and harder. I don't know if you guys were like that, but I couldn't, I could always do everything. I worked, there was times I worked three jobs. I was, when we had the kids, we took courses, parenting courses and family stuff, and I could do everything and hold it all together. But as my drinking progressed, and I never put the two together, but as my drinking progressed, everything got harder and harder. It was harder, like I had, my marriage was over, so I got that situation out. I didn't have to deal with that. I used to like to garden. I used to do like cross-stitch needlework. I was involved in things, but things just kept going away. I didn't have time for that anymore. I had no place for that in my life anymore. I had no time for cross-stitch, and I had no time for families. I think I've heard one of the early on in my meetings, I heard someone say that they treated family like strangers and strangers like family. And that was one that hit me between the eyes, because that was me. You know, my family was not that far away, but an hour and 20 minutes, but just far enough away that I could always just be too busy to take a call or too busy to go up for any kind of family thing. And that was true for me, that I just, oh God, I'm starting to fumble already. Anyway, got to get a grip here. My father was sober and Alcoholics Anonymous for 35 years, and I have his medallion, his 1 year in my pocket, and my 8 years, that's from him. So I'm asking Dad to be helpful. Anyway. So I guess as far as drinking, my story is probably the same as yours. It just got crazy, got worse and worse. But I hadn't lost things like a lot of people talk about. So, but I was insane, and my answer was, I'm going to have to kill myself. I can't live like this. I don't know what's wrong. I keep trying harder and harder. And what I was trying harder was not to quit drinking, but I was just trying harder to hold it all together, because that's what I thought. There was something wrong with me, that I was getting weaker, that I wasn't as strong as I used to be, because I was very independent. I could figure everything out on my own, and I didn't need any help, and it just kept getting harder and harder, and I didn't know what was wrong, so I thought, I'm going to have to kill myself. It's the only way to get out of this. And I have to tell you, it's someone dying is my answer to a lot of things, because I used to wish that, you know, when you have a really bad relationship, that if only the plane would crash, or if only the car would crash, and I wouldn't have to deal with this, that God would look after this situation for me, that he would be gone, or you know, they would move away, or and someone else will deal with the situation so that I don't have to deal with it, I don't have to make a decision. And God gratefully hasn't done that. Anyway. So I finally went to a detox in Moncton just to get some literature, because that was my answer. I knew there was literature, and I thought, if I just go in and get a leaflet, I'll go home and read it and figure this all out, and then I will just stop drinking or stop everything, and my life will be normal again. But they made me sit in the waiting room for a minute, and then they called me in to an intake worker, and she said I thought she was just going to tell me that everything was okay, so I told her my stuff, and I thought she was going to say, oh, there's nothing wrong with you, you don't have any problem, just go on home, you're just under a lot of stress from work. And she didn't say that. She just said, come back and see me. And so I came back to see her, and though I finally went, she suggested that I go to meetings. And I thought, well, that's only for alcoholics. I don't have a, I'm not that much, I don't drink that much. But, because my perception of the alcoholic is the guy on the liquor store steps with the brown bag looking for some change and all. That was, that's what I knew growing up. And that was what I thought was an alcoholic. I finally called her one day and I said, I'm going to go to a meeting. And I said, but I'm not going to quit drinking. And she said, well, you're not going there drinking, are you? And I said, no, I'm just not going to quit drinking. I'm just going to go to see what it's all about. And so I went in, and my very first meeting was a celebration. It was an anniversary meeting, and it was a big deal. It was not as big as this, but it was a pretty big deal in our small group. There was a lot of people, and everyone was laughing and talking, and they were so happy, and I couldn't understand. I was just, this can't be real. Like, what's wrong with these people? They're just too happy. And all I could do was cry and hide. And when they asked, was anybody here for their first meeting and wanted to pick up a 24-hour chip or anything, I certainly wasn't getting up for that. I said, no way, I'm not, because I'm not an alcoholic for starters. But I'm not going to, I was too ashamed. I had a lot of shame. I had a lot of shame about myself, and that I wasn't strong enough now to do things that I could always do. And I felt that was a real sign of weakness, that I should be able to drink like I drank. I should be able to work like I worked. I should be able to hold a relationship together. I should be able to do everything, but something is wrong. I don't know what it is. And so at that meeting, there was like I said, I didn't identify with anybody that was an alcoholic. I didn't identify with the readings and all that stuff. But a woman got up and shared how she was living in Shediac but was going to meetings in Moncton because she was ashamed to be seen going into AA, going into meetings. And that was enough of a hook for me that I identified, because I really was ashamed to be seen going in. I'm the one that was looking, sort of walking, putting my hand up, trying to get into the meeting without being seen, and nobody's going to see me. But I had a sailboat, and I was down at the wharf staggering around and in and out of bootleggers and walking, you know, coming out of the liquor store with the shopping cart. So I didn't mind people seeing me that like that, but I didn't want to be seen going into an AA meeting. So when that lady shared that, shared her shame, I identified with that. And if there's anything I'm grateful for in this program is you guys sharing. Because when someone shares their truth, their pain, their suffering, I identify. And that's when I pay attention and I know that that's me too. So thank you to anybody that does that. And I burn CDs and I'm on the road a lot driving, so I listen to a lot of speakers, and that's been a great help in my sobriety. So she shared that, and so I thought, well, I'll come back to one more meeting. And then the next meeting, a person got up and shared about their emotional bottom, because I couldn't identify with the physical bottom. I didn't have DUIs, I didn't crash cars, those things didn't happen to me, but I had that emotional bottom where the only answer is suicide. I just have to kill myself and get away from this. And if people looked at my life from the outside looking in, I live in heaven. I have a lovely little home, a little bungalow in Grand Dig. I got a view of the bay. And, you know, I'm pretty independent and life is not that difficult. But to me, I had to get away from it. So it's just hard to believe. So I kept coming back to meetings. I couldn't say that I was an alcoholic. It took me a long time. It took me 9 months. I don't know if anybody in here is like that. Had a hard time to accept that they're actually an alcoholic. And if there's anybody new here or newer here this morning and struggling with that, I think that the fact that I kept coming back was a good thing, because it gave me a chance and nobody forced it on me. Nobody said, well, don't come in here if you're not really an alcoholic, because I think, you know, I was looking for any reason not to be here. So if anybody had said, you know, you don't belong here, then that was okay. That's good enough for me. See, they told me I don't belong here. And that, of course, I think that's another universal alcoholic trait, is that I don't belong. And so I kept coming back. And it was, like I said, my father was in AA for 35 years, and I wouldn't even tell Dad that I was going to meetings. My brother Paul finally asked me if I was going to meetings, and I told him yes, that I was, and that was at about 9 months. And 9 months was when I finally said it at the group, that I was an alcoholic, that I accepted it. But it was still a gradual thing. I think my growth in the program has been very gradual, and at 8 years, it's, I shared this last week, that I'm more and more humbled all the time, because I realize the longer I'm here, the less I know, and I'm grateful for the humility. I'm grateful. Just, I don't know what to say. My life is so good. I have to tell you, my first, very first meeting, Dave, the man who, or our delegate who submitted my name, had said, stuck his hand out, and he said, don't leave before the miracle. Don't miss the miracle. And of course, you're a crying mess. I wasn't 24 hours sober, and I was just like, oh, get, you know, who are you? I just thought he was crazy. And he wasn't so crazy. He's not crazy at all. He's awesome. He's big in service, and that's him. Anyway, if there was any miracle in my life, was to reconnect with my father and have a relationship with my father. And that was my miracle. I thought my miracle was going to be, I'm going to win the lottery. Prince Charming's going to come riding in on that horse, and we'll ride away into the sunset, and everything will be wonderful. But the miracle in my life is the reconnection, the relationship with my father, the relationship in my family with my mother before she passed. I was able to be with both of them before they passed. Those are the miracles that, I think I'm getting close to 20 minutes. Anyway, so I just thank you very much, everybody. I feel like I'm very nervous, and I don't know if I said much, but if there's anybody new, keep coming back, because it works, you know? It works. Thanks.
Okay, we have one more speaker. Her name is Sky.
Hi, I'm Sky. I'm an alcoholic. If you can't hear me, just do jazz hands or something. So I'll speak louder or get closer to the microphone. I like to start, before I talk, I always like to give a shout out to my higher power. And the way I do that is I ask, your words, my voice. And that brings me back to a place of humility. I wanted to say, before I talk about gratitude, if anybody is here and you're feeling like you're separate and everyone else is doing the convention better than you are, and that you haven't been in the right meetings and everyone's having more fun than you, you're in the right place. So for me, words are birds. They come and they go. And I think what may be even more important than anything I can say to you today is just the fact that we're all here. You know, talking about gratitude, you know, I kind of just want to stand here and like transmit at you. And I was just thinking about that, and it's so interesting because every time we go to a meeting, there's a transmission. And, you know, you may think that because I'm standing up here and talking that I'm going to transmit something to you, but it actually works both ways. And that's why, you know, when I see on television or in a film a portrayal of an AA meeting, it's like really bothers me. And there's something very wrong with it. You know, it's very two-dimensional and flat and dead. And I'm like, ugh. But I think that the reason is that, you know, when you and me get together, and when you and me get together and we talk about God and this program, there is the third, you know, that's the higher power. And it's here with us. And that is, to me, the best part of this whole thing. Just the fact that we're all here, and then there's that other. So I have to be honest with you. The topic of the meeting is gratitude, a full and thankful heart. And if I was not asked to speak and I saw this meeting on the itinerary, I would probably not come. But clearly all of you did. And The reason I say that is because I have an innate aversion to words like gratitude or anything that rhymes with attitude, especially when you put them together, and things that seem like soft, you know, and mushy and new agey. But it is not. Gratitude is not a soft thing. It is a strong, really powerful thing. And when I first got here to this program, Alcoholics Anonymous, I heard that a grateful drunk will not drink. And immediately I thought, well, I have to do that. I have to be grateful because I need to not drink. I think that, you know, there is no such thing as a high bottom. If you come here, it's because you probably don't have anywhere else to go. My drinking career lasted for under 10 years, and I did everything very, very fast, very early. And, you know, the minute I started, my bottom, you know, came hard. And very quickly, it didn't even become fun. You know, if you're here, you know. You know how horrible it is to be an alcoholic. And the words that I heard in the Big Book made so much sense to me when I got here. And the two words they put together were incomprehensible demoralization. And no one had to explain that to me. Because when you wake up every morning and you say, today I will not drink, and you drink every single day, you know what incomprehensible demoralization means. So getting back to the point, grateful drunk will not drink. So how do I get grateful? Because I made a decision my first year of sobriety that I was not going to investigate Alcoholics Anonymous as a scientist. I wasn't going to, like, watch you and see what worked. I certainly didn't do that with alcohol and drugs. If something was on the table, I wasn't going to, like, oh, let me see if, you know, you get real drunk. Then I'll try it. I just put it all in. Because for me, it was all medicine. It was all, you know, get me out of here. And so with this program, I just decided that I'm not going to be a researcher. I am going to be a piece of data. And I'm telling you guys this because it worked out pretty well for me. And you can be a piece of data too. So I am just going to take, I'm going to stop observing. I'm going to take everything that I hear as truth. Everything in that Big Book, as far as I'm concerned, is true. And if it's not, that's its problem, not mine. Because it's been working out pretty well. I've been sober for 7 years. And I never thought that was possible. So the other thing I heard was gratitude is an action. And that made no sense to me whatsoever. I was like, well, first of all, it's a noun. It's not a verb. The language really bothered me. And I'm like, well, if it's an action, what is the action? What is the action of gratitude? And I feel like I could talk about that a little bit because I understand it a little bit today. The woman who 12-stepped me into this program, I mean, the amount of gratitude that one feels for someone who has saved their life, you can't pay that back. You can't. You have to pay it forward. And I have to say, you know, like that beautiful quote that Birdie read, you know, it moves forward. It doesn't move backward. You know, I thought it meant I have to just, you know, I will be your friend for life. Whatever you need, I will do it for you because you got me, so, you know, you helped me find Alcoholics Anonymous. And it turned out that, you know, like many, many things, I was wrong. The thing was to help the next person, and that is the ultimate expression of my gratitude. That's not to say that it's not also a feeling. Of course it is. It's a beautiful feeling, but I don't make gratitude lists because I will feel better, and if I'm feeling good, I won't drink. I will absolutely drink when I'm feeling good. I will drink when I'm feeling bad. I will drink when I'm feeling nothing. But I think we do the gratitude list to put into practice. You know, this is how our minds change. Just to give you guys a little example that I thought of was before I got sober, I had a lot of I put myself in a lot of dangerous places. I used to think I was fearless, but in truth, I was just reckless. And you know, I had a lot of ODs. I had a lot of alcohol poisoning. I had a lot of coming to in places that I didn't know where I was or who I was with. And eventually, oh, by the way, I didn't think I was an alcoholic. I just thought I was crazy, because to me, I just felt like life was pain. And I knew that not everybody felt this way that I felt, because if they did, the world wouldn't function. So I just thought there must be something wrong with me, because I'm crazy, because everything is painful all the time. And, you know, I was very grateful to find out that, you know, it's not that I'm crazy. It's not these 110, you know, diagnoses that I've received. It is really just this one thing, which is that I'm an alcoholic. And that's something to be grateful for, too. But when I realized that, you know, I was broken and life was pain and there was nothing else I could do, I decided, you know, I'm going to end it. And I tried. And when those doctors revived me in the ER, was I grateful to be given the gift of my life back to me? No. I was angry. I was so pissed off. Like, immediately I came to when I was yelling at people and ranting, and then they put me in the, you know, the ward where they babysit you, and they have a nurse sit there and have to watch you when you go to the bathroom to pee, and I was mad, and 3 o'clock would come, and I knew that I got Xanax at 3 o'clock, so I would grab my pole with all the, you know, liquids, and I would run down the hall, and I was like, I'm supposed to get my medicine now, and they were like, sit down, the nurse will come around. No gratitude. And that's, you know, that's how, I just feel like that's almost how much this program has changed me, because today I'm incredibly grateful for this beautiful life that I've been given. I wanted to say that, you know, for me, it's the 12 steps. That's the program. And it says in our 12th step that as a result of having done these steps, we will have a spiritual awakening. And it is my experience that when you have a spiritual awakening, you are on fire to give this thing away to other people. And that, you know, that is how I express my gratitude. You know, I'm on fire. Like, I see someone who comes into a room with 1 or 2 days, I want to go to them and show them how grateful I am that I've not been given my life back, because the one I had wasn't so great, but this new life that I've been given. And that, you know, tell them, you can have it too, and isn't it wonderful? And it's a strong thing. It's not a soft thing. It's not weak. It's very, very strong. And when I came in, you know, people told me I had the gift of desperation. And that is definitely true. I remember one of the first meetings I sat to in my wonderful home group in Washington Heights. Women were coming up to me before the meeting even ended. I hadn't raised my hand. I hadn't said, you know, I'm Sky, I have 3 days. I just sat there in the back of the room, and women were coming up to me and giving me their numbers. It's like, who does that? I mean, I must have looked kind of rough. I was like, how do they know? How do they know I'm new? But they knew. And, you know, and when I heard the gift of desperation, that term, I thought, wow, that's what I have. But then I realized, if you put the word gift in front of anything, instant gratitude. So it's like, you know, oh, I got work today. It's like, I have the gift of work. I have the gift of being employed. You know, today I'm married to a beautiful man in the program. I have, you know, but I'm not just married. I have, you know, the gift of marriage. And that's, you know, it's a gift. So if you're working on gratitude, I just realized, you know, you could put the word gift in front of it, and that'll do it. That it just, you know, it changes your mind. And this whole program is about changing my mind, because I have a mind that will drink. Just because I'm an alcoholic doesn't mean I can't drink. It means that I will drink no matter what. So anything, you know, that can change that mind of mine, anything that's not me, because I can't. And I was thinking about this topic. I was thinking about, there's this beautiful quote by Mother Teresa, and she says that you can live your life two ways. One, as if everything's a miracle, or as if nothing is. And so that's kind of where I sit today. I choose to look at it as everything is a miracle, and it's a miracle that I'm here. It's a miracle that we're all here today. Who knew how many of us there were? I mean, I didn't. And thank you for giving me this opportunity to speak with you today.
I'd like to thank all three of our speakers that were here today.